Webster's New World Dictionary defines credit as trust in one's integrity in money matters and one's ability to make payments when due. In other words, credit is a measure of trust between a lender and a borrower. The more trustworthy you are as a borrower, the more willing lenders are to loan money. Your credit can never be too good. Even if your current credit rating is high, it pays to improve it. Fortunately, the process of equipping yourself with good credit is simple. In fact, it involves three basic steps. First, evaluating your current credit. Second, establishing new credit if you're a first-time borrower. And three, improving your existing credit. The first question you should ask yourself is, how creditworthy am I? If you go to a bank to ask for a loan, will the loan officer approve your request? Knowing the answers to these questions will tell you how to best create and/or improve your credit. Most institutional lenders and businesses make lending and financing decisions based, in part, on credit reports, which contain information regarding an individual's borrowing and paying habits. To obtain such reports, the lenders or businesses contact local credit bureaus, which have access to the credit data compiled by one of the three major national credit repositories. The major credit repositories act as nationwide clearinghouses for personal credit information. They collect and store information that describes the credit history of individuals, and then they provide that information to local credit bureaus, or to the individuals themselves for a fee, upon request. Your credit report is a history of your borrowing and paying habits. It includes information concerning your past and current loans and credit cards, who you borrowed the money from, and how faithful you've been in making the agreed-upon payments. Because your credit report tells about your credit history, it plays an important part in determining whether a potential lender will consider you to be a good or a bad credit risk. That's why you need to know what's on your credit report and how to correct any errors it may contain. In many cases, your credit history will determine the loan terms offered by the lender. By law, the major credit repositories must provide your credit report to you upon request. At the same time, they must also inform you of anyone who has asked to see your report in the last 6 months. If you've been denied credit in the past 30 days, the credit repositories will provide your credit report free of charge to you. Otherwise, they'll charge a fee that is set according to federal and state laws. To obtain copies of your credit reports, you can send written requests to any or all of the three major credit repositories I just mentioned. Their names are Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, and you'll find their addresses and contact information in the appendix of my No Down Payment Manual. Any request you send should include your name, current address, employer, Social Security number, and your date of birth. If you've lived at your current address for less than 5 years, you should include previous addresses. You should also include a copy of a photo ID, for example, your driver's license, and a recent utility bill to help verify your address. If you have access to the Internet and a valid credit card, you can request and view your credit report online by visiting the Internet website addresses for the credit repositories. For that matter, you can also obtain your credit report from my own website, www.carltonsheets.com. Credit reports come in different shapes and styles, but they all typically include two types of data, general information and a credit score. The general information includes your personal data, credit history, and any other information that might tell a lender how trustworthy you are when it comes to paying back loans. The credit score is a number based on several factors that a lender can use to compare your creditworthiness to that of other borrowers. As a rule, credit reports contain the following types of information: personal data, including your name, address, date of birth, and Social Security number, your credit history, collection agency information, courthouse records such as liens, judgments, and other court filings, additional information including former addresses and employers, and inquiries including a list of requests for your credit information that have been made in the last 24 months and the purpose of each request. Credit reports can seem a little hard to read at first because they typically use codes to summarize information. The reports, however, include instructions that explain the codes, and some credit repositories even provide hands-on assistance and tips concerning how to read the report. You should know that credit repositories do not pass judgment on whether or not a lender should loan money to you, but they do summarize your borrowing and paying behavior and in some cases summarize your credit worthiness in the form of an overall credit score. The score is used to rank how your credit history compares with that of other borrowers. A loan officer can use the score, together with other criteria, to decide whether or not to approve your loan. Each credit repository uses its own formula to compute your credit score, but the formulas are all based on a modified version of a scoring model created by Fair Isaac & Company, Incorporated. That's why credit scores are often referred to as FICO scores, the first letters of the company name. The Fair Isaac model is proprietary, so it's impossible to tell exactly how each score is computed. Certain factors, however, are known to affect your score. In order of importance, they are, first, major derogatory items on your report, like bankruptcies, collections, foreclosures, and slow pays. Second, how long you've been at your present job. Third, your occupation. Four, how long you've lived at your current address. Number five, the ratio of your current balances to your available credit line. Obviously, the lower the ratio, the better. Number six, whether or not you own a home. Number seven, the number of recent credit inquiries, and the fewer the better. Number eight, your age. 50 or older is considered lower risk. Number nine, the number of credit lines on your report. And number 10, the number of years you've been in the credit repository database. Generally, your score is based on the following percentage breakdown. 35% is based on your track record of making payments on time. 30% is based on your current activities, including the number of credit cards you own and their existing balances, your available unused credit, and the balance on all other credit transactions. 15% is based on the length of your credit history. 10% is based on your new credit and what it's being used for, and 10% depends on the type of your current creditors. For example, loans from finance companies are frowned upon. The fact that each credit repository uses its own modified version of the FICO model to score your credit history means that there is a variation in scores between the different repositories. Therefore, you cannot compare scores issued by the different credit repositories against each other. Very few people have spotless credit records, although if you're one of them, good for you. It's also true that credit repositories are not perfect, and that credit reports sometimes contain errors or misinformation regarding credit histories. For example, if you bought an item and charged it on your credit card, then returned the item because it was, well, defective, but due to a clerical error, you were never credited for the return, your monthly statement might still show an outstanding balance for the amount of the purchase. While you're resolving the issue with a credit card agency, the outstanding balance might appear on your credit report as an overdue payment. Based on a study prepared by the United States Public Interest Research Group, 70% of all credit reports contain errors of some kind, and 29% contain serious errors. Common errors include amounts erroneously reported to have been opened that are either delinquent or designated to the wrong individual. The Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act, the FCRA, gives you the right to dispute errors you find in your credit report. If you're ever denied credit by a lender, the FCRA requires that the lender provide you with the name and address of the credit repository that supplied the information used in the credit screening process. If you inform a credit repository of an error, it is required to investigate your claim within 30 days. In particular, they must present your claim to the source of the error, for example, a merchant or a doctor or a bank. The source then investigates the error and reports directly back to the credit repository. If the investigation confirms your claim, the credit repository must provide you with a written report of their results and must change your credit report accordingly. If the dispute is not resolved to your satisfaction, you can add a brief statement of 100 words or less to your credit file describing the dispute and telling your side of the story. The credit repository is required to include a summary of your statement in all future reports. If you've never borrowed money before, you'll need to establish new credit before you can start developing a credit history. Money lenders require 4 or more open trade lines as evidence of sufficient established credit. And these trade lines can be banks, credit card issuers, or major department stores. You can accomplish this either by obtaining credit cards or by using a credit pursuit strategy. The first method is a straightforward technique for establishing basic credit. The second method is more complex than the first, but can quickly lead to a strong credit rating. These days, almost everyone has at least one credit card. If you don't have one now, you should make it a goal to get one. Credit cards are a convenient way to establish and develop credit. In the current economic climate, credit card companies face stiff competition from each other, and many offer cards with no annual fees and low interest rates. It is to your advantage to evaluate the competitiveness of your current cards and/or compare lending institutions before obtaining a new credit card. It is generally advisable to have more than one credit card, but you should think twice about obtaining more than two cards, especially if you have difficulty in controlling your buying impulses. Having too many credit cards can sometimes hurt your ability to get a loan, even if you never use the cards. A lender might decide, for example, that the total amount of credit available to you might allow you to build up a greater debt load than you could reasonably handle. I recently read about a man in Santa Clara, California, who had 1,186 credit cards, and he had a capability of borrowing over $2 million against those credit cards. I wonder how much trouble he would have in borrowing money from a bank. At first glance, it might seem impossible, or difficult at least, to obtain credit cards if you have no credit history. After all, how can a lender or credit card agency determine your credit worthiness if you have no past performance to evaluate? It's not uncommon, however, for some businesses and credit card agencies to issue cards to first-time cardholders. The key to obtaining such cards is in knowing which cards to apply for and how to apply for credit. To increase your chances of obtaining a first credit card, you should apply to businesses or lenders that most readily issue such cards. A few such businesses and lenders include gasoline companies, airline and major department store chains, local merchants, and banks that offer secured credit cards. Gasoline companies, airlines, and major department store chains, such as Sears and JCPenney's, often represent the easiest types of credit cards to obtain. As national retailers in a competitive environment, they're interested in attracting and retaining as many potential customers as they can. By issuing credit cards, they make it convenient for consumers to purchase goods in their stores. Local merchants, such as furniture stores or appliance outlets, are often willing to extend first-time credit to local residents. Like the national chains, they're interested in attracting and retaining potential customers. In the case of local merchants, however, reputations often spread by word of mouth. Showing preference to local residents helps a merchant build a strong and loyal customer base. Secured credit cards look like ordinary national credit cards like Visa or MasterCard. They work differently, however, in that they don't represent an actual loan by the issuing agency. Instead, charges made using a secured credit card are withdrawn from an existing account. It's your money. The balance in that account sets the credit limit for the card. For example, if you have a secured credit card with a $300 limit, you can charge purchases against the card up to a maximum of $300. Each purchase you make lowers the limit on the card, and when the limit reaches zero, you cannot use the card again until you deposit more money into the account. Secured credit cards do not directly establish credit, but they do establish a relationship with the issuing agency, for example, a local bank. Oftentimes, when the balance in the account is depleted, the bank will extend an unsecured credit limit on the card. And please keep in mind that this card might negatively affect your credit score. To obtain a secured credit card, visit a bank that offers such cards and deposit money into an account against which the card charges will be drawn. If the bank extends an unsecured credit limit when the account balance is depleted, continue to use the card in moderation and make the payments on time each month. When you apply for a loan or a credit card, you must usually fill out a credit application. As your credit improves, you might begin to receive offers for credit cards for which you've been pre-approved, however. Different lenders and credit card agencies use different types of forms, but in addition to personal data, most require information concerning employment and income, assets, and banking. I have included an example in my no-down payment manual so that you can see what a typical application looks like. In recent years, computerized screening programs have become a primary tool that credit analysts use in evaluating credit applications. The computer programs are designed to look for positive and negative factors and to weigh the factors against each other in recommending whether or not to approve the application. Positive factors include such things as home ownership, savings accounts, job stability, and a low debt-to-income ratio. Negative factors include things like too many dependents, no history of saving, job hopping, and a high debt-to-income ratio. Knowing how the screening programs treat the factors listed previously can improve your chances for approval when filling out a credit application. For example, in the employment and income section of an application, you should list the income of any family members who share in household expenses, including spousal income, even if your spouse is not required to co-sign the credit application or loan. If you're self-employed, you should list yourself as the president of your company, and if possible, obtain and list a business number that is different from your home telephone number. If you're employed by a company or a corporation, list a job title that sounds official, like administrative assistant rather than secretary, or account executive rather than salesman. Also, if you've changed jobs frequently, list the reasons for job changes on a separate piece of paper and include the list when you file the application. In the banking section of the application, list all of your current checking and savings accounts. If you don't currently have a checking or savings account, open one of each before you apply for credit. Finally, if you own credit cards that you haven't used for a while, consider canceling them before applying for new credit. Unused credit balances can lower your credit score. You can also increase your chances of being approved by making sure that your monthly debt load won't become unmanageable when you factor in the monthly payments associated with a new loan. The total amount of your monthly debt payment should not exceed a percentage limit of your gross monthly income. In general, those limits are: if you do not include a mortgage loan, the limit is 28%. If you do include a mortgage loan, the percentage limit is 36%. For example, if your gross monthly income is $4,000, your monthly debt payments, excluding a mortgage loan on real estate, should not exceed $1,120, which is 28% of $4,000. In addition, if you have homeowners association dues, they would be included in the housing expenses to income ratio. When you include the mortgage payment, your total monthly debt payments should not exceed $1,440, which is 36% of $4,000 for conventional loans. That means if your current monthly debt payments total $950 and your gross monthly income is $4,000, the highest mortgage payment you can afford is $490. How did I get that figure? $1,440, which is 36% of $4,000, minus current monthly debt payments of $950, equals $490. Again, that is the highest monthly mortgage payment you can afford. If you have outstanding short-term loans, 3 to 6 months, or credit card debts that cause your debt payment total to exceed the percentage limits I just mentioned, consider paying off the loans before applying for new credit. Finally, keep in mind that lenders often consider the purpose of a loan when deciding whether or not to approve an application. It's much easier to get a loan for home improvements, medical expenses, debt consolidation, or education expenses than it is to get a loan for a vacation. If you have cash available to you but don't yet have credit, you can use the cash to generate a credit history by using my credit pursuit strategy. The credit pursuit strategy works by using your available cash to purchase financial instruments that are then used as collateral to secure loans. It can be broken down into two major phases. The first phase of the credit pursuit strategy is a 6-step process designed to use available cash that you have or might borrow from a family member to establish a credit history. It goes like this. Number 1. Contact 3 local banks to find out the minimum amount of money that each is willing to loan on a short-term basis, that is 6 months. Number 2. Visit each bank and purchase a 6-month certificate of deposit, that's a CD, in an amount equal to the minimum amount that the bank will loan on a short-term basis. For example, if the minimum loan amount at a given bank is $1,000, purchase a CD in the amount of $1,000. If you don't have $1,000, borrow the money from a family member or a friend. As you'll see in a moment, the money is not at risk. 2 weeks after you purchase the CDs, visit each bank again and apply for a 6-month installment loan in an amount exactly equal to the value of the CD held in the bank. For example, you would apply for a loan of $1,000. Now make sure that the terms of the loan that you apply for are 6 months or longer. Otherwise, the loans are not going to show up on your credit report. At each bank, offer to use the CD issued by the bank as collateral to secure the loan. Loan officers are generally comfortable making such loans because if the loan is not repaid, the bank takes ownership of the CD used as collateral. You see, from the bank's point of view, the loan is a very low risk. If a loan officer asks your purpose in obtaining the loan, be honest and admit that you're trying to develop credit with the bank. Reassure the officer that the loan will be repaid on time, if not earlier than the term allows, and indicate that your eventual goal is to obtain a mortgage loan from the bank. Deposit the money that you have received from the three loans into an interest-bearing checking or savings account. You're going to be using that money in the account to pay back the loans. In each of the next 3 weeks, make full monthly payments on all three loans. After that, make regular monthly payments on time each month until all three loans are paid off. At the end of 6 months, redeem the CDs to recover your initial investment. In most cases, you'll receive a repayment coupon book from each bank shortly after you take out the loan. You must include a coupon from the book with each loan payment. It's advisable to make one or two payments directly to the loan officer rather than through the mail. Doing so provides you with an opportunity to get to know and build a relationship with the loan officer, whom you can then use as a reference when applying for loans at other banks. After completing this strategy, you will have established a positive credit record with three separate banks, each of whose loans will be listed on your credit report. From then on, you can use the three banks as credit references on future loan applications, and if you developed a relationship with the loan officers at the bank, you can even use their names directly. Because you recover the initial investment when the CDs mature, the total cost of this strategy is minimal. In fact, the total cost is equal to the interest you pay on the three loans, minus the interest you earn on the CDs and the money borrowed. You're going to be paying interest on loans totaling $3,000 and earning interest on loans plus CD of $6,000. In the second phase of the credit pursuit strategy, you improve the credit history you established in phase one through an ongoing process that involves the following steps. After you've completed phase one and established credit, return to each of the three banks and apply for a $500 unsecured loan for a term of 60 to 90 days. Repay each loan ahead of schedule. 6 months later, return to the bank again and apply for an even larger loan. Repay the new loans ahead of schedule. Repeat steps 3 and 4 every 6 months. You see, by borrowing larger and larger amounts of money from each bank in the form of unsecured loans, and then repaying each loan ahead of schedule, you'll improve your borrowing reputation with the banks and make it easier to borrow the large amounts of money that are sometimes required for real estate transactions. As I said before, your credit can never be too good. If you have bad credit, you should take steps to repair it so that you'll be able to borrow funds when necessary for fix-up projects or other expenses related to real estate investment. If you have good credit, it pays to make it better because doing so opens doors to opportunities that are otherwise unavailable to you. Bad credit is usually due either to errors in your credit report caused by others or by your own past borrowing and payment behavior. If your credit has been damaged by errors in your credit report, you can take steps to repair it by obtaining the report and disputing the errors as previously discussed. If your poor credit rating is a result of past behavior, you must stop the behavior and develop a new reputation of paying on time. If you have existing credit cards or accounts, you can begin the repair process by making regular monthly payments equal to or greater than the minimum amount due, and by cutting down on your spending, if necessary, at least until the account balances are of a manageable size. One of the most important factors in determining your credit worthiness is your ability to pay bills on time. By making regular payments, even if they amount to no more than the minimum due, you at least establish a reputation as a trustworthy borrower. If your current credit is so bad that you're unable to obtain a credit card by the methods described above, you should seek help through any one of the privately operated agencies that specialize in obtaining cards for people who have trouble getting them. Such agencies do not charge for their services if they're not successful in getting you a card. You can usually find them listed in the phone book, in the classified ad section of your local newspaper, or in major national newspapers like the Wall Street Journal or USA Today. You can also find them on the Internet by using a search engine, like the ones available at Yahoo.com, Lycos.com, or Google.com. Keep in mind that because your credit rating is based on your personal history of borrowing and making payments, the process of repairing bad credit can take a long time. Be patient and take heart, because many of the techniques described in this course for buying real estate with no money down work, even if you have bad credit. You see, your credit is like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the stronger it becomes, especially if you don't pay off the balances every month. To employ this strategy to increase your limits, charge a purchase on your credit card and make a payment each month that is 20% greater than the minimum payment required. In several months, the institution that issues the credit card will probably increase your spending limits automatically. Suppliers of the goods and services that you'll use as a real estate investor, such as hardware stores and landscape nurseries, can often be used to improve your credit. If you present yourself to them as a real estate investor, they might allow you to establish lines of credit for the goods and services they provide. Also, some suppliers will offer you a discount of as much as 20% on their goods and services because, as a real estate investor, you'll be considered a trade account, and obviously the suppliers will hope to gain and then retain your business. In addition to making good credit better, it's important to preserve the good credit you already have. One simple way to do this is to obtain overdraft protection at your bank. Overdraft protection prevents you from having checks returned to your bank for lack of funds. It works by advancing a small loan to you if you write a check that exceeds the amount of money you have in your account. Under the right circumstances, you can receive up to $100,000 of overdraft protection. This protection is especially useful when you need a cash advance for down payments and closing costs, because unlike credit card agencies, banks usually do not impose a service charge for the advance. In addition, the interest rate on a cash advance from a bank is typically lower than it is for a credit card cash advance. If you already have good credit, your bank will almost certainly allow you to apply for overdraft protection, and you'll probably be required to fill out a credit application. Some banks charge an annual fee for the service, which can range from $20 to $50, while others don't charge at all. If your current bank does not offer overdraft protection, you should open an account at a bank that does. Okay, let's recap the material I've covered in this audio chapter. First, you don't need good credit to buy real estate, but having good credit increases your financing options and therefore your investment opportunities. Credit is a measure of trust between a lender and a borrower, and the more trustworthy you are in repaying your loans, the more willing lenders will be to loan money to you. Your credit is summarized in credit reports that you can obtain from any one of the three major credit repositories. As a first step on the road to real estate investing, you should obtain and examine copies of your credit reports and take steps to establish or improve your credit history. If you don't currently have a credit history, you should establish credit as soon as possible and begin practicing techniques to build good credit. You can establish credit by obtaining a credit card from an easy credit source or by using the credit pursuit strategy described in this chapter. If you have bad credit, you should take steps to improve it, such as disputing errors in your credit report and/or obtaining a new secured credit card that you can use to develop good payment habits. If you have good credit, you should make it better, for example, by opening lines of credit with suppliers, requesting higher spending limits on your credit cards, and using your cards regularly and only paying the minimum balance plus 20% instead of paying off the balances every time. You should also obtain overdraft protection from your bank, which will allow you to obtain cash advances using your ordinary checking account. When I first started investing in real estate, I had no credit at all. As I was growing up, my parents, who were very conservative, advised me never to borrow money. They suggested that debt is bad. I followed that advice, and when I became an adult, I had no credit. My credit wasn't good or bad, it just didn't exist. Despite my lack of credit, I was able to borrow over $500,000 in the first 18 months as a real estate investor, and I did it without credit, financial statements, loan applications, or income verifications. How did I do it? One property at a time. Single-family home by single-family home, apartment building by apartment building. For the most part, I borrowed the money from partners and the sellers whose property I bought. Banks and institutional lenders were not involved. Over the years, I've learned the importance of having good credit. While I was cautious early in my life about borrowing money, I soon realized that incurring debt to acquire something that will go up in value, like real estate, is called good debt and can be advantageous. On the other hand, borrowing money to acquire something that will depreciate after you buy it, such as clothes or a car, is called bad debt and should be avoided if possible. Although many of the no-down payment techniques I describe in this course do not require credit, good credit always expands your options and opens the door to opportunities that would otherwise not be available to you.